CYC podcast, Discussions on Child and Youth Care, episode number 83. I'm Wolfgang Vachon. Recently, there was a long and fascinating discussion on CYCNet, the email group. It began with the experience of a student who was doing placements with young people. In one agency, she had used the phrase non-compliant to describe someone's behavior. She wrote in the post that the person was not listening, quote unquote. She was told by people at the agency not to use that phrase, non-compliant. In a second agency, she saw the phrase non-compliant used in the agency logs. So she made a post wanting to know from the larger CYC community, is it acceptable to use the phrase non-compliant when describing a young person's behavior? In the discussion, at least three people referred Elisa, the student, to an article by Dr. Lorraine Fox, and Dr. Fox herself contributed several times to the discussion. I've asked Lorraine to join me today to talk about the ideas raised within the discussion thread about compliance and non-compliance, and then some other areas. Dr. Lorraine Fox is a certified child care worker and holds a doctorate in clinical psychology. She's been a direct service worker, a supervisor, a clinical director, an executive director, and an assistant professor. And she's been sharing her knowledge and wisdom through publishing and presenting for several decades now. I'm thrilled that she's joining us today for this conversation. Welcome, Dr. Lorraine Fox.
Good morning, and I'm thrilled as well.
Oh, nice. Nice to hear. When the word compliance is used in institutions, what's usually meant by it?
Well, I think they usually mean that the young people do exactly what they're told.
And why is that a problem? Isn't that the ideal?
Well, not in a treatment center. And you referenced the discussion that went on for quite a few days. And I was frankly surprised and dismayed by people who I thought should know better, being quite naive to think that it always works out well for young people or anyone to be compliant. And I think that may be true for well-treated people. But I think when you know that you're getting paid to work with people who have not been treated well and who in some cases have been severely traumatized, just the idea that they should always go along with us just surprised me to this day, because the article that you referenced, I wrote many, many years ago.
Yes, indeed.
So it was hard for me to see that we're still struggling with the same issues.
Why do you think that is? Because you're right. I mean, you wrote that article in 94, and the article we're referring to is the catastrophe of compliance, and I'll post a link to it on the website that you can access. Why do you think we are still having this discussion 20 years after you wrote that article?
Well, I'm guessing it's because we really haven't paid enough attention to, well, there's two possibilities for me. One is we're just not paying enough attention to what exactly brings children into care. What is it? It's not their behavior. You did not come into a treatment center because of your behavior. You come into a treatment center because of abuse and neglect. And your behavior is just symptomatic of what happened to you. So it's just, I don't know why we're still having trouble thinking that it's their behavior that's the problem, because their behavior is the least of their problem. It's their emotional and mental torment that's their problem. And we see their distress acted out in their behavior. So I think for people that have been asked before, most of our kids have learned that compliance brings them pain. They've learned to lie because that's what their parents wanted. And now their lying is interfering with their relationships. They've complied with having sex that they didn't want and didn't know why somebody was doing that to them. They lied about their bruises when they were beat. They covered up for their parents who had left them alone or who were mean to them. They have gone along. Our children, in fact, have been quite compliant. And I think that's what happens to them. They come into with us, and we're naively assuming that they should know that we want them to go along and it'll be good for them. And they're wondering why we don't know that they're in a dilemma. Because I do believe they want us to like them and they want us to be happy with them. But compliance for them is a very complicated issue. And I think that our task with our children is to teach discernment. And discernment is much harder to teach than compliance.
So what do you mean by teaching discernment?
Discernment is what is being asked of me. Is it in my best interest to go along with what's being asked of me? What consequences can I predict from either going along or not going along? So discernment allows young people to do what we do every day, which is to decide, you know, should I go along with the speed limit, or am I late and is it worth getting a ticket? So, you know, I mean, I don't know any child care workers ever that I've ever met who always obey the speed limit.
Right.
And they always decide whether they're going to go 25 miles an hour or take their chances. And when kids do the same thing, we become infuriated. And I just think it's odd.
Yeah.
Because we're not known to be the kind of people who do everything we're told.
Indeed.
You know, I mean, the people who come into child and youth care work are of a breed, as you know. We tend to be a little headstrong, and we don't like to be pushed around. And we have a lot of opinions. And when the young people act like us, we make it a problem.
Huh.
And so I just think it's peculiar, because discernment is what allows us to live successfully, always knowing that I always have a choice, and the choice may be easy or the choice may be difficult, but there's always going to be a consequence. I think maybe the problem that we hire such young people sometimes, I remember when I first started in the work, I couldn't believe what adults had done to children. I couldn't believe it. It took me years. I think sometimes it still just knocks me off my feet. I think we don't want to let ourselves know what our children have. What the question always is, what has somebody asked this child to do? And we should know that from the intake. We should know why they're with us. We should know, what did somebody do to them? And this should inform us about why they're going to have trouble with us.
You've laid out a whole bunch of things here, and I'd like to look at some of these one by one. One thing I want to pick up on is this idea that, I always have a choice, or young people always have a choice. And I disagree with you. I think often the young people that we work with never had a choice, and perhaps they were told they had a choice.
So. No, I'm talking about now.
Okay.
They have a choice when they're with, we're not forcing them.
Okay.
And that's what happens. They finally are in a situation which they almost can't believe that they really can decide. I'm not going to push them. I'm not going to beat them. I'm not going to force them. And frankly, I think some kids get so happy at finally being able to choose something that they do it just for the sheer joy of being able to say no.
Right. Absolutely.
And we think that the consequence that we're offering them is so dire that they're going to go along with us. Again, being naive about, they have a payoff. And I think sometimes the payoff for saying no is so exhilarating that they don't care if they go on the outing.
Right.
They don't care if they don't get, you know, to have ice cream for a treat and they get an apple instead.
Right, right.
All the things that we think are going to lure them into compliance.
Right.
Disregard, it's like a two-year-old. You know, two-year-olds don't care what you're asking them to do. When they finally learn how to say no, they're so happy. They just stomp all over the house saying no.
Absolutely, absolutely.
And some of our young people, even our teenagers, are like two-year-olds.
Yeah.
Finally, they can decide.
Yeah. I want to circle back to this one more time because you've almost convinced me, but not quite. So you're aware, tragically, I think, and you talked about the disappointment in the thread. You're aware that there's a whole bunch of residential programs that still use the, you know, point and level systems, for example. So we say you can comply, or you know, your choice is not to. But in reality, we're not actually giving them a choice. We're saying you can do this or you will be punished. And it may well seem fairly arbitrary, the punishment. So there may be a pleasure and a joy in saying no. And I'm not convinced yet that in all agencies, there actually is a genuine choice. If the choice is between, you know, you do what we tell you, or we are going to punish you and we're going to, you know, take you off program and you're going to be isolated and you're not going to be able to participate. Do you still believe that's a choice?
Here's what bothers me. That's the exact same situation they were in at home.
Absolutely.
Why are we putting kids in the exact same situation? You can either go along or you can be miserable.
Mm-hmm.
You can either do what adults tell you or you're going to pay.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
How in God's name is that treatment?
Right. And that's I agree with you. Absolutely. I agree with you. It's not treatment. And
how can that be treatment?
Yes.
Why don't we let them learn to say no and stand up for themselves?
Mm-hmm. How do we do that? You talked about the sermon, and I want to go back to that in a moment. You know, I'm sure. Well, I won't speak for you. Although I think I have a sense of who you are. But let me speak from my own experience. You know, intellectually, I absolutely know that young people saying no is a sign of autonomy or individuation or whatever you want to call it, and it's a healthy, productive thing. And that when the young person can say no to me, that means that they may well be able to say no to other things in their life that's important for them to say no to. And I also know that there are times when I get really frustrated. So how do I, as a child care worker, a CYC, somebody who works with young people, how do I accept the no and see it as a strength in those moments when I just need to get everybody into the van because I'm the only staff working, and if they don't go into the van, nobody's going to make it to the baseball game?
Well, there's a couple of things, and that's why I'm so against points and levels. There consequences in life are never points and levels.
Mm-hmm.
There are always real consequences. One of the consequences is a disruption in the relationship.
Mm.
So, for example, when I had some of the real non-compliant up yours kids and we had to go somewhere,
mm-hmm.
I would start to the negotiation way before it was time to get in the van.
Mm-hmm.
Now it's, you know, we're going to have to go to the doctor at 3, and I know how you feel about that, and you're going to give me a lot of trouble because you've already told me you're not going to no stinking doctor.
Right.
And I'm telling you, you have to go to a stinking doctor. So why don't we make a plan now?
Mm-hmm.
Like, is there another thing that you can do that you want to do that I may not be crazy about, and we can do a barter? So you can, you know, like not do your, make your bed this morning and then come with me to the doctor.
Right.
But I think what the young people just want, and that's, to me, the consequence is sitting with us, being with us, and us helping them figure out why it's so hard for them to go along. So that, not so that I understand it, but so that they understand it. You mentioned, that's the relationship part of it. I know why you're here. I know why you're here. But and you're still fighting with me. But I'm not the one who hurt you. So let's see if we can figure out how I can help you decide when's a good time to stand up for yourself and when's a good time to just go along.
Mm-hmm. And how do we do that? How do we teach that discernment that you referred to earlier?
And that's, you know, well, that discernment, and this, I usually work with teenagers, so it becomes really crucial when people start dating that we've done enough work with them that they don't do exactly what they're told.
Mm-hmm.
Because doing what you're told when you're, you know, out dating can lead to the same kind of awful consequences I had at home.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think our job is to get them ready to make informed choices.
Mm-hmm.
And it's true that sometimes life goes better if you just go along. I would rather not pay another $300 for a ticket. So for me, it's better to go along with the speed limit, even if I think it's stupid. I don't understand 30 miles, but I'll do it. On the other hand, maybe I'm on my way to the hospital with my best friend and I'll take the ticket.
Yeah. I was talking recently to a man who, older man in his 60s, who does a lot of work with young black men. He's a black man himself. And he does a lot of work with these young men. And he talks about, he didn't use the term discernment, but he talks about the need to comply. When you're pulled over by a police officer, and right now in the U.S., you know, there's a heightened awareness of the existence of racism in the U.S. and anti-black racism in particular. When you're pulled over by a police officer, you need to comply because the consequences of not complying are potentially deadly. And
so the
dating reminded me of that story.
And then why do we make believe that making your bed or getting into the van are the same?
Mm.
I mean, why do we take our little requirements that it's the rule, it's the policy, it's not life and death. And that's why I get concerned.
Right.
I want them to know what's really important. You know, if this boy wants to do something to you that you don't want done, that's important.
And so how do we teach that? How do we, because I think many of the young people we work with, and I'd like to move into this idea of trauma, many of the young people we work with are traumatized and don't necessarily understand the difference always, whether it's a, you know, a parent or a boyfriend or a CYC or a police officer. All of them are people in authority who are asking them to do something, and they all get conflated. How does trauma lead to that conflation inside young people?
Well, I think that's exactly why, and I'm very happy with the movement that we have going into trauma-informed care. Again, trauma-informed care requires child and youth care workers to wrap their minds around things they would rather not think about. And I think the devil is in the details. We have to be willing to hear from our young people exactly what somebody did to them.
Mm.
What was it like to wake up as a young child in a dark house and realize that you were all alone and the door was locked from the outside and there was nobody there? Because your mother went on a date and she did not come home. Can we let ourselves look at this child now who looks terribly obnoxious, but we know from why they came to us that they spent many nights alone in a house, locked in a house with no adult there, or waking up to a new uncle? Or what was it like for somebody to know that her own father coming down the hall was coming for her? What was it like for somebody to be burned with cigarettes? Because we like to make things vague. And I think if we keep the reasons for placement vague, we don't understand their behavior. So I think trauma-informed care forces us to confront what actually happened to our young people. What did somebody do to them? And it's very much, and that's why there's so much like veterans coming back from the war. I mean, trauma-informed care gives us a chance to see that war veterans and their symptom categories are exactly the same as our kids. And in fact, and speaking of trauma-informed care, everybody knows that there are three groups of symptoms for war veterans and for abuse victims. The first group of symptoms are the re-experiencing or reenacting ones, where you can't stop doing or thinking about things that happened to you. The second category is called avoidance. And this is exactly where the compliance issues stem from, that people who have been traumatized will avoid putting themselves in situations that are going to stir up things that happened to them before.
Which seems like a completely rational, appropriate response.
If we remember why they don't want to get in the car.
Mm-hmm.
And what if I want to drive a little boy to the doctor in the car by myself? If I don't let myself free, and he says, I don't care what you do, I'm not going to no stinking doctor. And if I don't remember his history, I'll think it's about the doctor instead of he does not want to get in that car with me. Mm. Because I should know what happens to him when he's alone in a car with an adult. Mm. And if I don't remember what happened to him when he was in a car with his scout leader or his priest or his uncle, or then I'm not going to get it.
Yeah.
And I'm going to be fighting with him about all the wrong issues.
Yeah.
And then I'm going to punish him.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
For doing something. He's trying to take care of himself mm-hmm. by saying, I'm not doing that to myself, which is a great thing. But instead, I could put two people in the car. I could ask him who he wants to ride with. We could go on a bus. I mean, there's so many things we could do if I would just remember.
Right.
But I think what happens, as you said, in the heat of the moment, we've got so many kids, we've got so many things going on, we make it about the wrong things. Mm. We make it about making your bed, or we make it about getting in the car, or going to school, not knowing that some kids were humiliated in school, humiliated. And because they have FAS or FAE or FADE and learning disabilities, that they were made to feel so stupid because they were treated badly by their teachers because they couldn't learn. Of course they don't want to go to school. That doesn't mean they don't want to learn. It means going into a classroom to them brings up all these feelings of humiliation. Again, if I make it about, well, you know what happens if you don't go to school? No television. They're thinking, great, fine.
I won't watch television. Small price to avoid the humiliation.
I mean, humiliation or no TV. Easy choice.
Easy choice. What's the third group of symptoms? Talk about reenacting, avoidance. Oh.
Yeah, they're called arousal symptoms. Mm-hmm. This is where your system is kind of jumpy. You know, loud noises bother you, or you get your heart palpitates. It happens a lot, for example, when kids are forced to visit their parents who abuse them. The kids will get sick to their stomach, and it sometimes flush, and their heart will beat faster. And that's why a lot of soldiers can't, go to the 4th of July and listen to the William Tell Overture.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Those same three categories, the re-experiencing, the avoidance, and the arousal, if we know those categories, we can understand why our kids look and act the way they do.
Right.
Because I don't think ever behavior doesn't make sense. Mm. And I've heard people say, she does that for no reason at all. Well, there's no such thing.
Right.
I mean, not even amoeba do things for no reason.
If we understand trauma
and we can match what happened, what brought them into care, with our understanding of trauma, then we can also help them not feel so crazy. Because mm-hmm. some of our kids feel crazy. They don't know why they're like they are.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a reason. Mm-hmm. And I think information is power. That's our job. Here's why you're struggling. Here's why you're having trouble. What can I do to help? What can we do in the program to help? And we have this one-size-fits-all idea of programming, which is I published an article about this in the Child and Youth Care Journal about, I think one of the saddest things we've done in our work is move away from the medical model.
Hmm.
The medical model does not give the same medicine to everybody in the hospital.
Hmm.
The medical model finds out what is wrong with you, not the person in the bed next to you, not somebody else your same age. If you go into the hospital, they find out what's wrong with you.
Hmm.
First thing they do is ask you what your allergies are. And nobody in the hospital gets the same medicine. And why we think in treatment, we can slap the same treatment on every young person and they're going to get better, doesn't make a bit of sense.
So why do we do that? I absolutely agree with you. I hadn't thought about it in those terms of the benefits of the medical model, but I really like that framing of it. You're absolutely right. It's the treatment house, and we need to be consistent, right? It's another word that we use all the time. We need to be consistent so that, you know, everybody's treated fairly. And
fairly is not the same. See, that's the difference. Consistency doesn't mean the same as. Consistent, if you look up the consistent in the dictionary, we use the word consistent to mean identical.
Mm.
And identical is not the definition of consistent. Consistent means not in contradiction with. So if we're consistent, we're letting each young person get the treatment they need, not what their roommate needs, not what the guy down the hall needs. But consistent means, and the irritation of that is that child and youth care workers have to learn what happened to each child. Why does this child need a bed light and the other child is annoyed by the light and can't sleep?
So how do we move to that? And the sort of the extension of that question is why aren't we there yet? It costs too much.
It's easier to just hire a couple of young people out of college, give them a bunch of points and levels, tell them to watch what kids do and either reward them or punish them and go on with their day. And that's not treatment.
So Kiris Garibagi recently wrote a report about the residential care system here in Ontario. And
yeah, I read that.
And it's an amazing report. I mean, again, distressing and depressing as all get up. But, you know, the name of the report is As Though Children Matter. And I suppose my question to you is, do you think children matter in our culture? And I'll use North America to define our U.S. and Canada.
Obviously,
about culture.
Obviously, they don't matter because people are paid in direct proportion to how we value the product they're working on.
Mm.
So people who work with technology make big bucks. The example, I was actually doing a training yesterday and I was thinking about air traffic controllers, and they're whining that they don't get enough money at about $120,000 a year.
Mm-hmm.
And why are they paid so much? Because they're in charge of life and death.
Mm-hmm.
Well, so are CPS workers.
Mm-hmm.
CPS workers are in charge of life and death, but they're not in charge of life and death of passengers in a plane, but of children. So they get paid like a third of what aircraft traffic controllers. So we pay people, and so I think the rate that we pay people tells us what the rhetoric, tells us the lie of the rhetoric.
Hmm.
We say children are our most important, blah, 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 you know, the future of, but then we don't pay anybody.
So I
that's why people leave.
Right.
And that, you know, that hasn't changed. And I've been doing this 52 years. And that's why I feel still sad. I mean, nothing's really changed as far as the way we value our workers. And that's why they don't stay.
52
years. You can't buy a house on what we pay people.
No, absolutely not. 52 years you've been working this. You're now officially retired, although your retirement is very active. You're going to Winnipeg next week. You were doing training last week, so you're talking to me today. So you're
stand up. I'm in a wheelchair and a walker, so I don't do much.
Right.
I do what I can do sitting down.
All right, fair enough. But is any positive signs you see? You know, is there hope or Is there anything that you see on the horizon in this field that you think, oh, yes, this is what we're going in the right direction here?
No, actually, no.
Wow.
Especially not here in the U.S. Mm. If you mention CYCNet in the U.S., mm-hmm. there's probably 15 people who mm-hmm. log on to it.
Right.
If you talk about child and youth care journals, who mm-hmm. reads them?
Mm-hmm.
I would say almost nobody.
Mm-hmm.
And most facilities don't even have them.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
They don't even have a light. I mean, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So I think the fact that we publish articles makes us seem like we're professionals,
mm-hmm.
but all you have to do is to walk into a child care institution and ask, you know, where are your child care journals? And they don't even know what you're talking about.
So what can we do, Lorraine? Because I'm not going to let you leave depressing the heck out of me here and depressing all my listeners.
I don't know what to do. I don't know how to get, you know, we have Hillary Clinton running for president.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm purging my files because I'm retiring.
Mm-hmm.
And I found this brochure from 1980 something where Hillary and I were on the same program in Arkansas.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought to myself, and the reason we had her come to do the keynote is that she was, you know, running these big children's initiatives. And she has spent her whole life trying to better things for children. And I think, well, I certainly, I mean, and she's not been very effective.
Mm.
You know, and she's a fairly high profile person. So I'm not sure I know how to get, children don't vote and they don't pay taxes. And they can be annoying, our children. I mean, not only do they not vote and not pay taxes, but they tell you to shove it up your ass.
Yep.
So I don't know how to get people to love them.
Right.
I've never been able to figure, I mean, we love them.
Absolutely.
You and I love them.
Absolutely, absolutely.
I mean, and I find, you know, regular children kind of a bore. They're kind of a snooze to be around. But I haven't found a way to get the general public to love our kids.
Mm.
I wish I knew.
Yeah.
I mean, I wish I knew how, in the early days, I remember when I was first starting running, you know, runaway shelters, in my own naivete, I remember thinking, people have to know why kids run away. People have to know that it's so bad at home that they're more comfortable on the streets. And I was, you know, going on television and doing panels and running around at conferences. And so my discouragement is that people know now. And it turns out that wasn't the answer. It wasn't that people didn't know, and that's why we weren't getting the care they deserved. Because I think people do know now. And it's still not interesting.
Hmm.
And we can't even get a panel on incest anymore on television. It's so boring.
Mm.
You know, like 25 years ago or 30 years ago, it was, you know, salacious. And Oprah Winfrey was having her panels run. And
absolutely.
And you don't even see it anymore.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, incest, we know.
Mm.
So, but when you see those young people, you know, in our face and be with them, the pain is no less than it ever was.
No, indeed.
Our children still hurt as much as they always have. And I don't know why nobody cares about their pain. I really don't.
Well, I think, you know, I was hoping for a hopeful end to this conversation. And I think where the hopeful end is the need for work. And I think it's a call out to everybody who's listening and to those who are entering the field and those who are mid-career in the field and those who are later career in the fields to think what this field does need. And if you have ideas of how we can change this and how we can, you know, the thread that started our interview by Elisa, you know, there was an agency that said, we don't use the term noncompliance. And I think there are a lot of agencies who said, we are not going to do a point and level system. And there are agencies that say, yeah, we do get paid poorly, and we are committed to supporting young people. Not enough, I agree, and the funding's not there. But I call out to all the listeners to think about what do we need as those who love and care and work with children and youth and families.
I think what can keep us from getting discouraged is to just really narrow our focus. Mm. You know, when I was in my 20s, I was going to help kids. Mm-hmm. And when I was in my 30s, I was going to help a lot of kids. And when I was in my 40s, I was going to help some kids. And when I was in my 50s, I was thinking, maybe I can help this kid.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, just love the ones we're with.
Yeah.
I have not been successful at changing society and the larger population to love our children.
Yeah.
But if we have them, we love them.
Yeah.
Love the ones you have with you right now.
Nice. That's great.
And that's what we can do. You know, because I think, like you said, I mean, it can be very discouraging to look at the field in general. But you find some good programs and you find some people who still have the great heart. And I don't think we'll ever meet better people than in our work. Because despite the lack of interest in what we're doing and despite the lack of money, we still have people who show up every day. They show up every day and they give it another go.
Yeah.
And they start up the van again.
Yeah.
See how many we can get in.
Yeah.
Count when we come back. We have the same number. Sometimes it's fewer, sometimes it's more. But and you know, and our kids are just, I think they're funny and inventive and creative. And if we can keep ourselves out of the challenge and make it not about us, but about them figuring out how to live with make a life out of. What's happened to them with our help so that they don't go on hurting.
Indeed.
And that's what we can do. I mean, we can do that.
Yeah.
We can take this kid that we have today and give him or her a better shot.
And I think that's how I want to end it. And I want to thank you for the conversation today. And I want to thank you for 52 years of commitment and running around and being on panels and writing and sharing and continuing to learn. Thank you very much for joining me today, Lorraine.
My pleasure. My pleasure. Thank you very much.
Bye-bye.
This concludes this month's episode of CYC Podcast. Tune in next time for more discussions on child and youth care. Subscribe to us on iTunes or Stitcher. Visit us on our website at cycpodcast.org. Follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/cycpodcast.